Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcasts at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. China conducted major military drills around Taiwan. They lasted 3 days and were a countermeasure to the U.S. approval of $11 billion in arms sales to Taiwan, whose current president is seen as pro-independence. China condemned the demolition of a monument honoring the Chinese contribution to building the Panama Canal. The U.S. government pledged $2 billion in humanitarian aid to the U.N. in 2026, down from $17 billion in 2022. It was reported that the CIA launched a drone strike on a port facility in Venezuela. Israel says it will borrow 37 aid groups from Palestine, including Doctors Without Borders, the International Rescue Committee, CARE, and Oxfam. NHK Japan.
China has announced it's conducting major military drills around Taiwan. Officials in Taipei condemned the move as an open challenge to international law and order. The drills are codenamed Justice Mission 2025. The drills will focus on patrolling to prepare for combat and closing important ports and areas to examine combat capabilities of the troops. The Chinese military said it'll carry out important military drills on Tuesday, and China's maritime authorities are calling on ships not to enter nearby waters. A Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson was asked at a news conference if the drills were a countermeasure against the U.S. approval of arms sales to Taiwan this month.
This is a severe punishment for Taiwan independence forces, which are attempting to achieve their goal through armed means. The external forces that are arming Taiwan for the purpose of controlling China via Taiwan are putting the Taiwan Strait at risk of war.
The drills come as China ramps up military pressure against the administration of Taiwan President Lai Ching-te. Beijing regards his ruling Democratic Progressive Party as pro-independence. China's military says it's ended its large-scale military drills around Taiwan. The People's Liberation Army's Eastern Theater Command made the announcement Wednesday on social media. The Chinese military began the drills on Monday. China said they were a stern warning to so-called Taiwan independence separatist forces and external interference. It also said it deployed destroyers and other weapons to waters around Taiwan to test its ability to organize a blockade and carry out long-distance live-fire exercises. Beijing has criticized the decision by authorities in Panama to remove a monument to Chinese workers who helped build the Panama Canal. This comes amid rising tensions over the key waterway with the United States. The monument was built near the canal about 20 years ago. The AFP news agency and others say it was torn down on Saturday. The Panamanian authorities say the monument had structural damage and posed a risk. But President José Raúl Mulino has criticized the move, saying there was no justification for it and calling it unforgivable. A spokesperson for China's foreign ministry said the demolition goes against the friendship between the two countries. The ports along the canal are operated by a company based in Hong Kong. In March, it agreed to sell the business to a consortium that includes a U.S. asset management firm. But China opposes the sale, and it's unclear how further negotiations will play out. The U.S. government has pledged to contribute $2 billion in humanitarian aid to the United Nations in 2026. The amount is far less than the country has provided in recent years and limited to certain nations.
We're announcing $2 billion, which is a sizable commitment.
U.S. and U.N. representatives said the funds will be used for programs managed by the U.N. Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or OCHA. The U.S. officials said the agreement covers projects for 17 selected countries, including Ukraine and Sudan. He also said Afghanistan is among the nations excluded, citing the risk of funds being diverted to the Taliban. A U.N. official welcomed the U.S. support, saying it could save millions of lives. Media outlets noted the U.S. had in recent years allocated as much as $17 billion per year. U.S. broadcaster CNN has reported the Central Intelligence Agency launched a drone strike in Venezuela. The target was allegedly an area U.S. President Donald Trump claims is used for illegal drug smuggling operations. Trump announced on Monday the U.S. struck a dock area used to load boats with drugs. But he did not mention when or where the attack took place. CNN cited sources familiar with the matter as saying the strike occurred in early December on a port facility on the coast of Venezuela. It added no one was present at the time and there were no casualties. The possible first U.S. attack inside Venezuela could raise further questions about the legality of a U.S. anti-narcotic campaign under international law. Israel says it'll bar dozens of aid groups from operating in the Gaza Strip, but there are concerns the move could further worsen the humanitarian situation in the enclave. The Israeli government announced on Tuesday it'll revoke the licenses of 37 international non-governmental organizations on January 1st. It cites anti-terrorism measures as the main reason. The foreign ministers of 10 countries, including Japan and Britain, expressed serious concerns in a joint statement issued on Tuesday. The statement says, one in three healthcare facilities in Gaza will close if international NGO operations are stopped. The ministers called on Israel to allow the organizations to engage in sustainable activities, but Israel has resisted. One of the suspended organizations is the Norwegian Refugee Council. It warns the ban could seriously harm the ability of international NGOs to help Gaza's residents.
We already are seeing needs continue to grow in Gaza despite the ceasefire. People need food, they need shelter, they need medicine, they need clothes, they need clean water. And so the idea that there would be further obstruction for humanitarian agencies means that those needs will not be met and that they'll continue to grow.
Included in the list are Japanese organizations such as the Japan International Volunteer Center and the Campaign for the Children of Palestine. Humanitarian conditions remain severe in Gaza. People continue to face serious food shortages even after a ceasefire took effect in October last year. Palestinian authorities say nearly half of hospitals in the enclave are unable to provide adequate care as they lack medicines and fuel.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may be easily found at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. A press review on French President Macron's New Year's speech, which included proposed plans to follow the Australian ban on social media access for teenagers under 15. Last Friday, Israel recognized Somaliland, which is the only country to do so, with widespread opposition. Anwar Bashir of the East African Institute for Peace says the hidden agenda is for Israel to use the area to attack Iran and Yemen and to relocate Palestinians to the region. France 24.
And here in France, Emmanuel Macron delivered his New Year's speech.
Yeah, that's right. And among the plans for 2026, the French president noted that French lawmakers have put forward a draft bill to follow in Australia's footsteps and ban social media for access for teenagers. The Guardian noting that the draft bill cites the risk of excessive screen use by teenagers, including risks such as being exposed to inappropriate online content, sleep issues and bullying. A ban on social media for under 15s is proposed, as well as a ban on mobile phones in high schools, in other words, for teenagers between 15 and 18. As Le Monde newspaper notes here, though, it will be debated, but before this, it will have to pass the Council of the State, France's highest administrative authority, for a legal review.
Israel's recognition of Somaliland as a sovereign state has caused diplomatic ripples around the world. The East African country operates autonomously and declared independence from Somalia in 1991, but has not, until Israel's announcement last week, been formally internationally recognized as such. Somalia is very unhappy, and its president's heading to ally Turkey on Tuesday to discuss the move. Meanwhile, on Monday, China also slammed Israel's support of Somaliland, and an emergency UN Security Council meeting was called to discuss the matter. In the breakaway territory itself, though, many have been celebrating.
In this stadium in the city of Hargeisa, Somaliland's de facto capital in northern Somalia, people gathered in their thousands to celebrate the official recognition of the state of Somaliland by the State of Israel. While some celebrated, others protested as the news quickly divided the country. That same evening in the capital, Mogadishu, Somalians voiced their anger.
We came to this rally in response to the offence committed by Israel against the sovereignty of our country.
We are gathered here because we oppose Israel's actions against our country, which aim to divide us. We say to Israel that you have broken international laws as well as diplomatic codes.
Somalia's president was quick to condemn the move in parliament, saying that Benjamin Netanyahu's recognition of the territory was an act of illegal aggression.
We tell the world the infringement committed by Netanyahu and his attempt to divide the Federal Republic of Somalia endangers the peace and tranquility of the world and the region.
A number of countries across the globe have since voiced their opposition as well. The European Union called for respect of Somalia's unity. Somaliland declared its independence from Somalia in 1991. The self-proclaimed republic is strategically placed on the Gulf of Aden. It has its own money, passports, and army. Until Israel's announcement, it had failed to be recognized by any UN member states.
We are joined now for more of a breakdown of the implications of Israel's recognition of Somaliland as a sovereign state by Anwar Bashir, who heads up the East African Institute for Peace and Governance. He joins us now from Kenya.
The move of Israel is not only recognizing Somaliland, but it wants to have an access to the Red Sea so that it can attack Iran and Houthis. But on the other hand, it will give, you know, a valid justification to terrorist groups like Al-Shabaab to use a nationalistic agenda and say that we are defending our country from the external intervention, and it will cause more instability. And there is also a hidden agenda, which is relocating the Palestinian in Gaza to Somaliland. So all these will create more instability and more fragility to the already fragile region of the Horn of Africa.
Thank you so much, Anwar Bashir.
Those reports were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. Also, most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Russia claims it shot down 91 drones from Ukraine intended to attack Russian President Putin's residence. Zelensky denies the event ever happened, while Russia showed videos of it. Analysis by Anna Matviva, a research fellow at King's College London. Then an excerpt about the proliferation of AI deepfake videos making up to 50% of the reels on social media and the danger. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Now, Ukraine has dismissed video footage presented by Russia as evidence of an alleged Ukrainian drone attack on Vladimir Putin's residence. Ukraine's foreign minister described it as laughable. Russia's defense ministry said Ukraine launched 91 drones at the residence in the Novgorod region and that Russian air defenses thwarted the attack. No damage or injuries were reported. Kyiv accuses Moscow of inventing the attack to block progress at talks on ending the war in Ukraine. Well, let's look at this with Anna Matveeva, who is a senior visiting research fellow at King's College London's Russia Institute. Her research interests include conflict and security. Welcome to DW. Let's start with the video that Russia released. What does it tell us?
I think that it's important that the timing of the video and the timing of the incident. I have to mention that it's not the most dramatic incident in the whole Russia-Ukraine war, but it is nevertheless significant. I don't think that Russians have completely made it up, because frankly speaking, why should they? There is already a lot of other attacks going on. And we also have a Western silence because the Western radars also were monitoring the skies. And if they would say, no, we have registered no attack whatsoever, that would perhaps sound a bit more credible if rather than we just have the statement from the Ukrainian side.
All right. So the silence of Ukraine's backers is rings loud in your ears. And if this was therefore a Ukrainian attack, what do you think its purpose might have been?
Well, the significance of the incident is not in the terms of damage or potential damage, but in terms of the timing and in terms of the message it sends. Because in December there were already two attacks. There was an assassination in Moscow of a Russian general who was just going from his flat to his workplace, trying to get into his private car. Apparently that's something which has been well planned, prepared, organized. It doesn't happen very often. Then there is this drone attack, again, long-range drones, again, targeting a specific kind of civilian target. So that gives a sense that the rules of engagement of this war are changing, and the Russians' responses say, okay, if you are escalating, we are also prepared to escalate, and maybe you would not like it.
Right. So if this was a Ukrainian attack, do you think it was a serious attempt to try and kill the Russian president, or would it be perhaps more of a spectacular, just for show?
It is something which is sending a signal that we can do it, and we can reach significant symbolic targets, even if this attack was not successful. But just one drone, if it managed to get through the Russian defenses, could have inflicted significant damage. But the thing is that we are coming to a crucial time in the peace negotiation process. And that's why this incident has importance much more than just the military side of things.
This attack, if it happened at a time when President Zelensky was actually holding talks with Donald Trump. So if this was a Ukrainian attack, why would they choose that moment to carry it out?
To send a certain signal to the Russian side that things can get worse for you. Well, this is the rules of asymmetric warfare. What you can and cannot do within the parameters of engagement. Normally they are kind of conventions and understandings rather than kind of the laws of war, if you like. This is also something which gives Russia some kind of sense that they can do something drastic. And if Russia would be provoked, into some kind of drastic response, that Ukraine can go back to President Trump and say, hey, this is what they are doing to us, and this is really, really bad.
Thank you for talking through us through that, Anna Matveeva from King's College London.
Wild animal attacks, newborn babies running out of hospitals, celebrities committing crimes. All on our feeds and all AI generated.
They grab your attention, push your fear, or they make you believe things that never happened.
AI video generators got so good that it's getting harder and harder to tell what's real and what's AI generated.
Let's have a look at why this is problematic, how they are produced, and how to spot fake video.
A study found that participants were only about 50% accurate in spotting AI-generated content, including audio and visual AI material.
Some of these clips, such as the running babies or cute rabbits on the trampoline, might be harmless and funny. But social media amplifies the spread of political and emotional messages.
The broader thing here that you have to understand that's dangerous is that when we enter a world where half or more of what you see is fake, when you see the real thing, you're not necessarily going to believe it. And then, so suddenly our world has two dangers. People are doing bad things with deepfakes and generative AI. Scams, frauds, non-consensual imagery, child sexual abuse, disinformation campaigns. But then, when the real video of police misconduct, human rights violations, a politician saying something illegal or awful comes out, what's going to happen? It's fake. I'm not responsible for this. And so when you see this massive flood, everybody becomes suspicious of everything. And now we have a mess. Because I would argue that if we have a society where we don't agree on basic facts of what is happening in the world, we are destabilizing societies, economies, and democracies. And that's what the combination of AI and social media are doing.
The AI-generated viral hits follow a recipe as old as social media, evoke strong emotions. This is the key to getting engagement. People that are triggered emotionally are more likely to comment or share.
So check content before you share it.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. And most podcast sites, by that I mean Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this show, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for the donations, which are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you're listening on a public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba covered the top 10 news stories of the year 2025. Here are three. Israel attacks Iran and there's retaliation. The U.S. launches a war on Venezuela. And electoral victories of the right in Bolivia and the far right in Chile marked a turn from increasing socialism in South America. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Israel attacked Tehran, the capital of Iran, on June the 13th under the pretext of halting the country's nuclear program, which authorities have reaffirmed is peaceful. The strike killed Iran's chief of staff, along with three other senior commanders. Iran retaliated with ballistic missiles that struck Jerusalem and Tel Aviv. Thus began the 12-day war, which ended on June the 24th, during which Iran fired more than 500 missiles at Israel, some intercepted by Israel, according to the regime spokesman. The brief but intense conflict caused major economic losses for both sides, disrupted global trade, and diverted air flights. The United States attacked Iran's nuclear facilities in Fardon, Natanz, and Isfahan on June the 22nd. The retaliation, the Islamic Republic launched a limited missile strike against a U.S. military base in Qatar. Contrary to President Donald Trump's claim that Iran's nuclear capacities were destroyed, Tehran's uranium reserves and appears intact. On June the 23rd, Israel attacked residential buildings in Doha to assassinate Hamas leaders meeting in the Qatari capital. In September, the United States launched its so-called war on drug trafficking in the Caribbean, deploying a disproportionate military fleet in an aggressive posture toward Venezuela.
I don't think we're going to necessarily ask for a declaration of war. I think we're just going to kill people that are bringing drugs into our country. Okay, we're going to kill them.
Destroyers, an aircraft carrier, the largest in the world, the USS Gerald R. Ford, a nuclear-powered submarine, and more than 15,000 troops formed this armada, which firepower struck drug-running boats, according to the White House. Senior military officials, including the Department of Defense, now called the Department of War, reportedly ordered survivors of the attacks on the boats to be executed rather than captured. The United States claimed without any proof whatsoever, because it doesn't exist, that the vessels came from Venezuela and carried narcotics to be introduced into the United States, despite the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime not considering Venezuela a drug trafficking hub. The Bolivarian government asserted that Trump's administration is attempting to install a puppet regime in Caracas. In a dramatic move, Trump authorized his forces in the Caribbean on December the 10th to intercept and seize a Venezuelan oil tanker violating free trade and maritime law, a move described as blatant piracy. Victories of the right in Bolivia and the far right in Chile capped electoral processes in both countries. The ruling Movement for Socialism in Bolivia was defeated in the August general elections, winning just over 3% of the vote and interpreted as a sign of wear and internal divisions en masse. Inflation and fuel shortages also cost the Movement for Socialism in its votes. In a runoff between right-wing candidates Jorge Quiroga and Rodrigo Paz, triumphed as the candidate of the Christian Democratic Party. In Chile, the leader of the Republican Party, the far-right José Antonio Kast, won in December's presidential runoff against progressive Jeanette Jara. Kast holds positions sympathetic to the legacy of dictator Augusto Pinochet, who left 3,000 victims, torture, and a dictatorship. His father, Michael Kast, was in Adolf Hitler's Nazi party at the age of 18. Now, José Antonio Kast, the far-right candidate, will be leading Chile after his inauguration in March.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu most of the time, but there are no podcasts. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at 6000. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.